on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a different twist today, hearing from two veterans living on California's Central Coast. The interviews you're hearing on the radio today were also recorded for television and will be airing throughout the month of July in the San Luis Obispo area on Charter Cable Channel 2. That's thanks to David Ryle, John Kurt, and their program, High Profile. Thanks to Andrew Cannon and the staff of our Hometown Heroes affiliate, KVEC, for allowing us to use their studio to record today's show. Time now to meet 90-year-old John Wilcox. He's enjoying the Central California coastline now in the shadow of Morro Rock, but it was some very different coastline he encountered 70 years ago with the 1st Marine Division on the other side of the Pacific Ocean. And before that, he grew up in the Los Angeles area, two brothers, two sisters. You were right in the middle. What do you remember about growing up in L.A.?
You know, the most fun we had was going out in the orange orchard and shooting rabbits with a 20-gauge double barrel.
And what do you think stands on the area where you did that now?
They're certainly not shooting there, that's for sure.
If they are, they're not shooting rabbits.
Times have changed. Aren't any orange trees.
Yeah, no orange trees for sure. Do you remember how you found out that America had been attacked in December of 41?
Yeah, it was on the radio.
It seems like every veteran has a memory of that day. Everyone who was alive then remembers that. What did that mean to you, to hear that the Japanese had attacked the U.S.?
Well, there wasn't a whole lot we could do about it at that time. It was kind of a shame to lose all those sailors. I think we lost 2,800 or something.
And you read about that, maybe saw some newsreels, started to grasp how devastating the damage there was?
Yeah, everything was on the radio.
When did you decide that you wanted to be one of the few, the proud, the Marines?
Well, when Uncle Sam told me they needed me pronto.
Your brother was already in?
Yeah, he was older. He's 4 years older than I was.
And he was a paratrooper, right?
Yeah. He just died a year ago.
So
we're pretty lucky. All three of us got through the thing.
You had a younger brother that served at the end of the war as well?
Yeah.
For you, the Marine Corps. Why the Marine Corps?
Well, because they had a certain job to do, and the Navy had so many different jobs that they could put you in that I didn't want any part of that, and nobody wanted to go in the Army, so the Marine Corps was about all that was left.
It's funny, I've heard a lot of different stories from guys on why they joined the Marine Corps, but I don't know that I'd heard the process of elimination quite like that, as you described it. What was the hardest part of your training in the Marines?
Crawling under the barbed wire with a 30 caliber machine gun shooting over your head. All the guy had to do was move the gun and you'd have been dead.
A lot of people don't realize that this was going on all over the place in World War II, training with live ammunition. So you've got to keep your head down, and that guy on the gun better be accurate, or you're going to have some casualties right there in training.
I never met him, but he missed me.
What did that do for you? Did that help you maybe learn that this is real?
Yeah, it let me know that the Marine Corps was kind of serious.
Little margin for error, huh?
No error.
Do you remember what it felt like to head overseas, say goodbye to your family?
We left San Diego. It took us 18 days to get to New Caledonia, which is a French province. I was seasick before I got out of the harbor, and I was seasick still when I got to New Caledonia 18 days later.
Had you ever been on a ship before?
No.
No wonder you were seasick. That doesn't sound very encouraging. Here you're starting off this adventure, but you know it's your life's going to be at risk, and you're seasick the whole journey, huh?
Yeah.
Were you thinking, hey, there's no place like home, get me out of here?
No. Well, you don't get out.
That's right.
Unless you're dead.
A lot of people have heard about some of the Pacific battles. They've certainly heard about Iwo Jima, and they've seen those iconic images, and maybe they've heard about Okinawa, where you would end up wounded, but a lot of people have not heard about Peleliu, and it's a shame, because there are a lot of American lives lost there. I believe close to 2,000 Americans killed and another 8,000 wounded just on this island, and a battle that was supposed to last, I think in one of the Admiral's estimates, 4 days? But you guys were there for what, 2.5 months?
No, I never kept track of how long we were there.
What do you remember about getting there?
Well, I remember coming off of the landing ship. I was carrying a BAR at the time. All I saw were Marines ahead of me. There was a little fat schoolboy major there in the Marines, and he was jumping up and down trying to get the Marines off the beach up into the higher land. It had a raised, the water was much lower than the turf that you had to get on to go mm-hmm. on. And we could see the tracer bullets going over it, so there was a Jap machine gun nest up there. And they quit firing after a while, but all these Marines were on the beach, and this poor young major, he was trying to get him up over the level ground.
Yeah.
But there was still these tracer bullets going by, and nobody was anxious to stick their head up and get it shot off.
Did you have any idea what you were in for there?
Well, I knew that we were either sink or swim. We either survived or we didn't.
And you mentioned carrying a BAR, Browning Automatic Rifle, so you had a little more firepower than some of the Marines with you might have had.
That thing was invented and used in World War I, which was 20 years earlier.
You're saying it didn't always work the way it was supposed to?
Oh, it was reliable, but they had a spring in there that could get weak, and the spring threw the bolt forward in the gun, and it never happened to me, but I'd heard it happen to some Marines that had used the BAR. It was a pretty good weapon you could put out a lot of firepower with it. It had 20-round clips. You could fire it fully automatic, which wasn't like weapons today, but it was still pretty awesome.
The one spot on that island that has become infamous because it was so difficult for American forces to capture was Bloody Nose Ridge. Did you have any experience there?
Yeah, when we landed, the Marines had a couple of 105s that they didn't get into operation, and we didn't have any of our tanks get on shore. So MacArthur sent a couple of his Army tanks over to us with their crews in them. When a tank went into battle, they always sent a group with them. That's infantrymen that could fend off any enemy infantry from throwing charges on the tank or anything. We'd shoot them if they tried. I think where we were with those Army tanks, two of them, was Bloody Nose Ridge. Three other guys with me were on one tank, and I don't know who was taking care of the other tank, but they threw canister at us, but we were in pretty good shape because we had the tank between us and the gunners, the Jap gunners, and they fired these canisters, which are ball bearings that I don't know how many were in there. I guess there's 100 and some in a shell. We were protected by the tank itself because we were behind it or to the side of it. I was laying there and the damn tank backed up and damn near pinned me with its tracks. I had my arm right where the track came back.
Holy moly.
They were backing up, so I moved.
I guess so. Well, I'm sure there are a lot of times you had to move, and I know you would eventually be wounded on Okinawa, but did you have some close calls at Peleliu?
That was pretty close.
The tank?
Defending our tank against the Jap.
I
was able to point out where the Jap fire was coming from because when they fired the gun, they had yellow smoke that came up. We didn't have yellow smoke in our ammunition, so it had to be a Jap. Shooting at them. That's when they shot the canister. And then they tried to put a projectile down the barrel of the gun on the tank. That tank had either a 75 or 76 millimeter gun on it, and they didn't make it. It skinned the barrel of the tank. I got a piece of the brass off of something in my leg, but it was just a scratch.
That sounds close enough for me.
Yeah.
So you're on a tank, and they hit the barrel and splinter it, and a piece of it goes into your leg.
No, they hit the side of the barrel. They didn't get it. If they'd have gotten it in the barrel, it would have probably exploded the shell that was in the gun.
Yeah.
In the tank, and that would have been that one tank that would be out of action.
And you might not be talking to me.
Well, that's possible. But I'm talking.
And I'm glad you are. Did you see buddies that were wounded, that were killed? Can you help us understand what that scene was like? Because that helps us understand that the price that was paid for us.
The one thing that was really strange about it, they had a 10-inch naval gun up at the end of the airport. They'd fire that thing, it sounded like a train going by. But they'd only fire it once in a while, and I think they fired it for about 5 days, maybe once or twice a day at most, and then no more. So they either ran out of ammunition, or that's all it could have been. They ran out of stuff to fire. I think the gun got so hot when they fired it that they could only fire it once in a while.
I mean, you're 19, 20 years old while this kind of stuff is going on. Were you scared?
Well, there's no reason to be scared. You're either alive or dead. I mean, what the heck?
Where did that come from? Because I think a lot of people would be shaking in their boots. How do you think you maintained your composure and your focus and survived all of that?
We just had a job to do and we did it.
Did you leave some buddies behind on that island? Did you lose anyone that you knew?
Well, I never got that buddy with any of them. I mean, I didn't get that friendly with any of them.
Was that by design?
Well, it's kind of by, you just don't get friendly with the troops. That way you don't miss them when they're gone, for one thing. And it's a real effort to stay alive when you're in a situation like that.
Let me read you something here, because this was in Huntington Beach Press Telegram and Long Beach Sun back in January of 45, and it's talking about you. You guys had turkey dinner for Christmas in the Philippines or in the Pacific somewhere, but it goes on to talk about Peleliu. They wrote you up in September of 44. That battle started in September, went all the way to November, and it said, when his fire team leader became a casualty while attacking a well-fortified enemy position, Private First Class Wilcox unhesitatingly took over the team and directed their fire to such advantage that the objective was secured with no additional casualties. They called it heroic leadership, and your indomitable fighting spirit were in keeping with the highest traditions of the U.S. Naval Service. Was this the incident when you saw the yellow smoke?
No, that was...
Tell me about this that the article's about. Who got wounded? It says your fire team leader became a casualty.
Well, I don't even know who he was. We just passed the word from man to man as things progress. And
what made you step forward and lead?
Well, I guess because I was a squad leader.
Because, you know, they don't write that kind of stuff about a guy that didn't do anything or a guy that didn't step up. When you received that citation, did it mean anything to you?
Well... Yeah, I wasn't impressed, no.
You were just happy to be alive?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Okinawa.
Well, we're in the First Marines were in reserve. I think there were something like 6 Army divisions on Okinawa when we got off our boat that we were on, went down a cargo netting with all our equipment and got into a little LCVP or whatever they call them, those little boats with a ramp on the front, and we were the 13th wave. We were ready reserved to replace any Army division that got clobbered. None of them did, so we didn't do much.
You didn't do much, but I believe you have a Purple Heart from that island.
Yeah, it was by the grace of God I ever survived that.
Tell me about it. What happened?
There was a big crevice, and we'd taken that hill that day. We were ordered to take the hill, and we got the high ground. I didn't lose a man, but when we were in the trenches there at the top of the hill, management was throwing smoke in the area where we advanced through the mortar barrage. They didn't give us face masks or anything, so all the smoke made us cough, and one Jap heard one of us coughing and tossed a grenade over the bank, and it landed next to a Marine from the 7th Marines. He came to us and said, I'm your contact. The grenade fell under him, I guess, or he was on top of it when it went off, so that ended him.
Did he smother that to save other lives?
No.
It just happened to be under him.
We were all coughing. Nobody could stand the smell of smoke without coughing. And all they had to do was issue us face masks, and they wouldn't have been coughing, and the guy wouldn't have been located to get a grenade tucked under his body.
There are a lot of those kind of what-ifs, I'm sure, throughout your story. That's one guy in your crew that's out, but you almost got taken out, too. You got a bullet in your shoulder, didn't you?
Yeah, through my ear. I think the guy jerked the trigger. Or that split my head like a watermelon. He was behind me, and he was a sniper.
Tell me where
As
that
I
was.
As I say, that was right next to Shuri Castle. They were going to defend that property regardless of what happened.
Yes, Shuri Castle, at least 500 years old at that point, and the historic home of Okinawan royalty. It would be almost completely destroyed by the Marines in 1945, but it was later rebuilt, eventually reopened a little more than 20 years ago. You can visit it today. But John Wilcox never reached it, hit by sniper fire as he approached. We'll explore more about that in a moment and find out how he made it out of there alive when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
I'm really trying to redefine the hearing aid in general. today's modern hearing aid is vastly different from your father's or grandfather's hearing aid.
Nathan Lev, owner of Sound Advice, with an eye-opener for our ears.
We've got hearing aids now that are directly linked to iPhones. You can stream phone calls directly from your iPhone to your hearing devices without any intermediate piece at all. If you're on a jog and you want to listen to music, you stream music directly from your phone to your hearing device.
Sound Advice, with new innovative products and the best possible care by a licensed hearing aid professional.
Well, I'll be happy to give somebody a consultation. There's no cost to that. I'll give you all the different price points and then shop around, because you have to find not only a device that suits you, but a provider that suits you as well.
Begin your quest for better hearing. Call Sound Advice at 579-1310 or visit online at hearingaidsfresno.com.